1250 AM and online.
This is your Guinea's student radio station.
You are
why. It's 6 PM, good evening.
The URY Sports Hour.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the URY Sports Hour. I'm Mitch Holder-Mansfield. Coming up on tonight's show.
Here we go with the countdown. This is it.
And if you can still hear us, Lancaster have won this match 62 points to York's 27. And with that 4 points, they win Roses 2014. York lose the 50th edition of Roses, but go down fighting. We'll be reviewing some of the highlights from last weekend with those that took part. Also on tonight's show, can York City complete a dramatic turnaround with promotion to League One?
I think York have every chance, but it's very, very nip and tuck.
As the Minster men prepare for their playoff semi-final against Fleetwood, we speak to BBC Radio York's Barry Parker about the team's prospects. Plus, we'll be taking a look back at the inaugural York Triathlon and a look ahead to this weekend's Premier League finale. All that and lots more to come between now and 7 PM on the URY Sports Hour. But first, here's URY's Ben Basin with your latest news headlines.
The URY Sports Hour with Mitch Holder-Mansfield.
That was Ben Basin with your latest URY news headlines. More in half an hour. And don't forget, if you want to share any of your Roses experiences with us tonight, you can join the discussion by sending us a message at www.ury.org.uk, on Twitter at URY Sports, or on facebook.com/URY Sports. But for now, in 1965, the University of York Vice-Chancellor suggested a boat race between his university and Lancaster's. Taking its name from the 15th century civil war between the House of York and the House of Lancaster, the Roses Varsity Competition was born. Almost 50 years on, the 50th edition of the tournament took place last weekend at Lancaster, with over 140 different fixtures and 328 points up for grabs. Who would clinch the Carter James Trophy? URY was there to find out. But before the action could really get going, there was the small matter of an opening ceremony. There to take us through it was URY's answer to Hugh Edwards, Hazel Irvine and Trevor Nelson combined. Harry Whittaker.
You're listening to URY and Berwick FM joint coverage of Roses 2014 live from Lancaster. And the opening ceremony is about to begin and we will be bringing you coverage of that very, very shortly.
Welcome to the opening ceremony of the 2014 Roses, the 50th anniversary of Lancaster University and the Roses tournament. We're just about to begin with a live band. I'm Michael Hunter and I am joined by Bailrig Steph Braun and URY's Harry Whittaker. Hello,
good
guys.
Good afternoon, good evening, Michael. Hello, Steph, to you too. Very excited to be here.
A very exciting time. This opening ceremony is a first that we know of.
Well, you know what? If I can kind of describe the situation to you, we're literally in a purpose-built stadium. There's kind of flanks of seats they've put up. The football's going to be happening here in just a bit. I don't really know what to expect from the ceremony.
I am very excited for all the surprises that are coming.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a huge event. I mean, I wasn't expecting this when I arrived. I was just like, there's so many seats, and it actually kind of looks like a proper stadium.
Now, I tell you what, the word pyrotechnics has been bandied about a lot, Michael. To be honest, if I don't see some sort of flaming object, I'm going to be disappointed. I might have to set something on fire myself.
We don't allow people to set things on fire here at Lancaster University. York,
no
maybe do.
No burning things, Harry.
Well, we'll just see how the evening progresses, shall we? That goalpost is looking very flammable to me.
Ruin the football. Ruin the football.
Looking onto the pitch now, final preparations are underway for the start of the ceremony. It looks like we've got a brass band.
It's a wind band, I think,
It's a wind band,
it looks like
right.
There's some other instrumental families going on there.
All the instrumental families
are here.
I can see an ambulance there in the background too.
Getting ready in case Harry sets something on fire.
Exactly right. Good to be prepared.
You sounded pretty sure about it, to be honest.
Tell you what, as I turn round and face away from the pitch, is that a cheerleading team there? They look very cheerleading.
They do look very cheerleading.
It says they're a street team, but I'm not entirely sure what that means. They haven't got any pom-poms. Oh, no, the
Lancaster,
cheerleaders are behind
them. Well, I presume
them.
The Lancaster team do have pom-poms.
Yes.
And there's a pink team in front, but who knows?
Listeners.
Street dancing team.
Aha, Mitch.
Can confirm that noise you can hear in the background is the wind band starting.
2014. They sounded fantastic, didn't they?
A Bon Jovi wind medley.
I tell you what, amazing. Very strong selection of tunes. Very windy here at Lancaster.
If you are listening at home, if you are listening to Bearing 87.7 FM and UI 1350, up to the minute coverage from the Roses opening ceremony, where we are in the middle of a cheerleading set. Is that the correct word, a set?
A set of
yes, okay. Some of these stretches, I can see an ambulance in the background. I mean, if one of them overexerts themselves, it's good to know there is safety by the side of the pitch. Lots of pom-pom shaking. In fact, those pom-poms haven't really stopped moving since the cheerleaders entered the field of play.
It really has been full throttle.
Indeed, I would feel disappointed if the pom-poms were put down.
And
that's the end of the performance. And the crowd goes wild for the cheerleading team of Lancaster University.
That was the Roses 2014 opening ceremony. Perhaps a little more Susan than Danny Boyle at times, but the stage was nonetheless set for York to earn a 2-2 draw in the men's football first fixture, the least they deserved. And talking of men's first, I'm pleased to say we're joined now live in the studio by men's swimming captain, Bill Timpany. Thanks for speaking to us, Ben.
No worries.
How did Roses go for you guys?
We lost the men's swimming. We won the girls' swimming, so 4 all overall, I think.
Mixed.
It's all right, yeah.
Mixed. What about you and your individual events? A strong one?
Yeah, we were hitting club records pretty much throughout the team, so that was good. But at the end of the day, they were just a bit too quick for us. And yeah, they've got some really fast swimmers going on.
Okay, we all know that the away team in Roses tends not to do so well. Why is that, especially with regards to swimming? Is it quite difficult to go to a new pool and to adjust?
We were thinking about this, and I can't really see the difference in terms of the pool, because a pool's a pool, they're all 25 metres long, really. But maybe staying over the night before, trying to get some sleep on the lecture halls, floors, it's not the best preparation. I mean, if you sleep in your own bed, it's a little bit different, isn't it?
No, so is that what you did? You had to slog it out?
No, because I'm actually from Lancaster, so I had the whole swimming team staying over at my house, like 22 people my parents cooked for them, and we're sleeping in a tent in the back garden and got about 20 minutes kip. It wasn't there.
Okay, so not so bad for yourself, but clearly something that might influence the entire team.
Yeah.
Okay,
so.
You're going to be here next year. What are you guys going to do to prepare to take revenge?
We'll just keep training. We'll go again. Same as we have done this year. Everyone's trained well this year. New captain next year, Ben will push us on. But
who's your captain next year, sorry?
It'll either be Ben or Matt. Matt's one of our freshers. Ben's going to get interviewed in about 20 minutes for the triathlon. They'll both be great.
Okay, great. So are you looking to take in some new swimmers, perhaps, come along and think about competing next year?
Yeah, we always look forward to getting the freshers in again. We're fortunate this year we've got a lot of keen freshers who will only grow for next year. I mean, they're going to get faster. So we'll rely on them a bit more, but we've got no one leaving, which is quite nice. I know Lancaster have got a fair few swimmers leaving this year, so
right. Well, we wish you best of luck for next year. We're sure you're going to be able to take revenge. In the meantime, thank you very much for coming in to speak to us, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, those that have had the pleasure of attending Roses in the past will know that a somewhat unexpected highlight is always the darts. This year's event was no different. Your wife Stephen Bromfield and Harry Whittaker were there to tell the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your second game of the evening. It's Lancaster to throw first. Come on!
So here we go then, the first leg of the second set here of the men's first darts in the Great Hall in Lancaster. Lancaster leading by 1-0. Lancaster have the darts in this second set of the match.
Oh, another 121 from the Lancaster player, who turns round and waves at the crowd as much as to say, how did you like that? It leaves him on 69, which is known as banter for obvious reasons. He needs 69. Now this is, he's left himself 19 for the ball. He's gone 18 for double 16. In fact, I think he's hit the 36 left. I think he's hit the 36 there. He's just checked with the referee what he's got left. And he's taken it. A 69 checkout. And Lancaster lead the men's first darts by 2-0.
Phenomenal.
And that is why he's ranked fourth in the UK University Darts ranking. A 69 finish. And Lancaster lead York 2-0.
Margaret's just at the top end of the bed. He moves down, moves along the hockey, and hits it with his third dart. An 88 finish, and Yorker on the board. It's 2-1, and here the sort of hushed tones here. I don't think the Lancastrians like that.
That's probably the quietest you've heard it all evening, listeners. That's because York have taken the set.
And the game is way back alive now. 3-0 would have been a big mountain to climb. 2-1, it really is, as they say, game on. 29 for the York player, probably looking at a 5. No, he's not. He's gone a different way. He's hit a 13. He's now saying to the crowd, come on, give
it
to me. He wants double 8. This is like Peter Wright. He wants 2-8. And he's a long way away, about 3 inches away. And then he's inside. That backfires.
Very much so.
32 for Lancaster then. And takes him with the first dart. And Lancaster move ahead. And hashtag Bansby is in hashtag trouble here after encouraging the crowd and then not backing it up.
Very embarrassing, actually, for the young man.
And so that's cost York. That's cost York pretty crucially in that one. And Lancaster now leading this sixth set by one leg to nil. And that was costly, that. And I'm not necessarily sure that it was the wisest time in the game to turn to the crowd and actively get them involved. And this is Lancaster's chance to take this sixth set. Double top. Just below. Cross for double 10. It's there. And Lancaster have moved into a 4-2 lead in sets. How crucial was that? And the player celebrates by raising his hands in the air. And it's obviously his girlfriend he was talking to in the front row as he bends down and grabs somebody and gives them a great big kiss in celebration. And why not? Because Lancaster lead York 4-2 in the men's first dart.
And the hands are up. The Lancaster fans are going wild.
Double 4 for Lancaster. This takes roses for them if it goes in. And the third dart is the closest of the three, just on the inside wire. So he'll be back if he gets a shot, if Harry Smith doesn't take double 1. And he doesn't take double 1. He hits an 18.
This is painful, listeners. Painful.
Lancaster need double. And they've got it. And Lancaster have won.
24-3. The men's first dart. They lead York by 5-2. They are jumping up and down and celebrating, and the captain has done it. Gaz Horton has beat Harry Smith, his York counterpart, by 2-0 in the seventh set. And this place has erupted. And why not? Because Lancaster have done it. They've beaten York in the men's first dart.
And I tell you what, it means so much. So I look down from the balcony, people hugging each other, high-fiving, shaking hands. And congratulations to the University of Lancaster, who've taken the men's dart. York on the other side of the room looking slightly despondent.
And with it, they're taking the crucial 4 roses points.
That means only 13 points until Lancaster can be officially crowned champions.
That was Stephen Bromfield and Harry Whittaker illustrating the darts action on Saturday evening. And so, disappointment for York on the night, but one person certainly captivated by the cult-like atmosphere was UOY's Claire Thomas here in the studio. Hello, Claire.
Afternoon, Mitch.
Claire is here to put some questions to York's men's darts captain, Harry Smith. Thank you for joining us, Harry.
Yeah, cheers for having us in.
Claire, firstly, what is it you find so captivating about the darts?
This is pretty blasphemous to say, but actually the darts was my favourite part of all of Roses this year, including playing and watching all the other sports put together. I went last year to report on the women's and the atmosphere was good, but I'd heard that I'd missed out by not going to the men's, so I thought, right, this year, that's it. Finishing my match, I'm going to buy a Bulmers and I'm going to watch the men's and see what all the fuss is about. And oh my gosh, it's amazing. The music is as loud as anything in a club. The commentators are so witty. Atmosphere is absolutely incredible. And it's actually a really exciting sport. I hadn't given it credit at all before. You can come out of nowhere in darts from really far behind to claim a really exciting victory. But yeah, it was brilliant. Couldn't have loved it more. But as you said, it's not about me. It's about Harry, who's here in the studio to talk about his experience. So starting with you specifically, your round came at a really crucial point, I believe, when York were 4-2 down to Lancaster. How did that feel? Was there a lot of pressure on you as captain and at that moment to perform?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've never really felt before. I mean, coming into last year's game, I sort of had a almost no pressure game. And throughout most of university darts, I haven't really met anything that pressurised, but 4-2 down. Knew I had to win. We had two guys left. Again, not they didn't have a lot of experience, so it put even more pressure on to make sure we got the win. I was out, stood out through the double doors, and I had Dylan Chambers, which you'll all know, you know.
Deal or no deal.
Failed, sadly failed UC president. He'll love me saying that. And I had him and I had my best mate out there, and they said, look, and the rugby captain also came out and had words with me, and he said, look, he said, don't be worrying about the outcome before you've not even made the done the performance yet. He said, the performance gives you the outcome. He said, if you're going in there downbeat, you're not going to do anything. So he said, just go out there, try and play as good as you can, have as much fun as you can, see what happens. And I did. I thought I went out there. I thought it was a great game. I thought all our guys played fantastic. And just sadly, it all came down to hitting the double.
I think it did. Yeah, a lot of the matches came like really close to the nail, so it was a tough one there. And going back to speaking about the atmosphere, do you think that having a home crowd advantage for Lancaster really kind of got them to raise their game? Does that make a real difference, especially in a sport as vocal as darts?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, like, the atmosphere in there was electric. It was fantastic. I mean, even to playing home or away, when you play at home, you've got pressure on you in terms of, you know, you want to win. You've got so many people behind you. When you're away, you kind of want to just stick it to them and get one up over them. But, you know, the home crowd, especially in that atmosphere, you had a lot of people up against the stage, banging on the stage while you were throwing a lot of oohs and ahs, and it does put you under a lot of pressure.
I can contest as one of the people throwing oohs and ahs. It was incredibly noisy in there, and I can imagine really difficult to concentrate. But you definitely gave Lancaster a scare. They had a lot of people announced as sort of, oh, this ranking nationally and won this title, and you really pushed them. It was a great thing to see. And moving on from the men's, the women's, how did they do? I know they lost, but do you think they were pleased with their performance?
Oh, I think the women should be pleased. I mean, the women played fantastic. I mean, in between the men and the women, the guys always go in. This year we went in as favourites, which okay. We sadly didn't achieve. But, I mean, the women always go in every year, sadly, as sort of underdogs, because the Lancaster women have their own women's league over there, and they're also part of a lot of men's national sides.
I had no idea.
They're actually part of like the Uni Cup, which is like the big darting event of the year, really, and they always qualify for that. And this year, they actually beat Lancaster men in the semi-finals. So, in the semi-finals of the plate, mind, because they both didn't qualify for the cup, which, woohoo, York did.
Well,
but they both qualified for the plate, and the women actually beat the men. So I thought our ladies getting 6-3 was absolutely fantastic, and I think it was almost unjust them losing. I mean, the performance they put out there, a lot of new players they had in the team. And I think next year, if they get a lot more recruits in, I reckon they'll do absolutely fine.
You've started my next question for me. Next year, can we expect a double from York when Lancaster come over here?
Oh, that'd be ideal. I mean, that's what we're after. That's essentially what we're after. This year, we're going to... same with the men, we had a very new team. Yeah, a very, very new team. I think there was only two of us which played in Roses this year, which played last year. Which is unheard of. I mean, the year before, most of the team had played the year prior to that as well. But this year we had a very new team. Everyone knows now what it's like to play on that stage. I mean, particularly impressive, Fred Evans. I mean, his first time on the stage, absolutely smashed it. Like, G'd on the crowd. You know, I don't know if you've seen the photo of him with his hand behind his ear, asking for it. And no, I think next year, a lot more participation. We get a lot more events going, get a lot more people involved. I reckon we'll have a fantastic shot.
Definitely do, and I know I'll be fighting for a front row seat, so lots of promise for the future, and I really wish you the best of luck with your next season. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us, and I think we're going to hand it back over to Mitch.
Thank you very much, guys. I think I might want to give darts a go myself, and hopefully after hearing about this, a lot of people will want to take it up. We've got a lot of love about the darts coming in online. This from Kat in Harrogate. Big shout out to the darts team. We endured a lot of abuse that evening. We will have it next year. So fighting talk there from the darts team. Thank you very much for speaking to us. Hopefully hear from you next time. Moving on now to the rugby. Few sports in Roses, if any, carry more importance than the rugby, not least because it has been dominated by York in recent years. The Black and Golds didn't have it all their own way this time around, however. The men's third going down 40 points to 15. The first defeat for York in men's Roses rugby in 5 years. It was then down to the men's first to restore order in one of the most anticipated fixtures of Roses. Harry Whitaker and Alex Light were there to talk us through the first half.
And just in front of us now, we can see the team from York running onto the pitch, dressed in the black and gold of the university.
They look in fine shape today, Harry.
Absolutely they do. They're expecting a massive game. Lancaster entering the field of play dressed in red and the crowd going wild for the home team. Lancaster to kick off this afternoon as we begin one of the biggest games of Roses 2014.
And we have kicked off. Lancaster have kicked to York, taken in by number 8 there.
Receives and makes an excellent run up the centre of the pitch. Already a very physical start to the game.
Yeah, very physical.
Excellent clearance,
very good.
York scrum half. He's made 50 metres there, and they're very happy with that. We must be nearing the end of the first
half. I think that they're having the end of the first half. York in the lead, 18 points to Lancaster 0.
Game of rugby, Alex Light.
What a brilliant half of rugby, it must be said.
Unfortunately, the home crowd here, which is at capacity at the Roses Stadium, are unable to cheer for their home team. They are 18 points down.
York went on to win that one, 23 points to 15, in a result to match the outstanding women's rugby win earlier on in the day. The final score there, 20 points to 5. I, however, was busy watching the men's hockey seconds over on the Astro pitch.
A comfortable 3-1 victory over Lancaster saw York take the 2 points in the men's hockey seconds this afternoon, in front of a boisterous crowd at the Astro pitch. Seeking revenge for their 2-0 defeat in last year's fixture, it was the visitors that settled the quicker of the two sides after a delayed start. And only a fine instinctive save from Lancaster keeper Callaghan prevented York's Hubbard from giving his side a 15th-minute lead following an explosive effort on the turn. York didn't have to wait too much longer for the opening goal, however, as Guy swept home from an Emerson assist midway through the first half. Life got yet worse for Lancaster soon after when they were issued a warning from the referee over the conduct of their fans following some colourful chants. But a combination of stubborn defending and sloppy York finishing kept the score at 1-0 until half-time. At the beginning of the second half, a plane flew overhead carrying a banner with the message, "I am Lancaster." But it was again York who got off to a flying start, doubling their lead within 5 minutes when Sherrington Scales just about got on the end of a rapid and excellently executed counter-attack. Guy, scorer of York's first goal, this time providing the assist. Spurred on by a partisan crowd, tensions on the pitch threatened to rise when York's Butterworth and Lancaster's Bushby were both given yellow cards and 5 minute suspensions following a seemingly innocuous and largely accidental collision. More handshakes than handbags on the touchline, however. Lancaster did manage to get a goal back with 10 minutes remaining when Tam converted a well-worked penalty corner. But any hopes of a dramatic conclusion were soon dashed when York restored their 2-goal advantage just 2 minutes later with a penalty corner of their own. Captain Dom Mums fittingly with the final finish. Final score, Lancaster 1, York 3. After the game, I spoke to York captain Dom Mums about the win.
Dominic Munns, congratulations. Your thoughts on the performance, please.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, we lost last year, so it feels extra special to win this year. On top of getting promoted in our Bucks League, we call it the double, so all the chaps are really happy.
Great, it's a pretty dominant display. Are you pleased with how you played?
Yeah, I thought the first half was really good. We won a lot of shorts, and today we managed to convert our shorts, as we didn't convert 17 last year. So I thought on that front we did really well.
Excellent. I heard one of your teammates say that the second goal might have been the best you've scored all season. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. We're not too good on the counter-attacks normally, so it was good to slot one of them away for once.
Finally, I see you've got a bottle of champagne in hand already. Yeah. You're going to be celebrating tonight?
Yeah, the boys will be celebrating, yeah.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So, 2 wins from 2 for York in the hockey seconds, but still double the points to play for in the men's and women's first fixtures this afternoon.
That was my report from the impressive men's hockey seconds. And to find out how the other teams did get on, I'm pleased to say we're now joined in the studio by women's first captain, Izzy Hutchinson. And to speak to Izzy, you are wise, Will Rawlinson.
Thank you very much, Mitch. Yes, we are here with Izzy Hutchinson. Izzy, it's lovely to have you here in the studio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
To start off, we're going to start with your team's performances. You played indoor and outdoor. Unfortunately, you lost both. But how do you feel the team played throughout the Roses?
The ladies' first side had really, really good performances all round. We're a very new, inexperienced team with a fantastic intake of amazing freshers. It was such a pity that we had to go and then lose against a really fantastic Lancaster side.
How did you feel the other hockey teams played? Did you see any of them while you were at the Roses?
Yeah, I keen supporter, diehard hockey fan, so supported all of the games, and the York performances were brilliant. We've got a new coach this year, Simon Law, who's done such a fantastic job with all of the teams and has put in a lot of hard work and dedication, and his style of hockey was really shown on the both courts on the pitches.
That's fantastic. And what did you think of the Roses as a spectacle? Did you enjoy it whilst you were there?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a lot different to the York one, everything being in a kind of village. There was an amazing atmosphere, and obviously home Roses is a lot different to away ones. There's huge support on the home front, and obviously with some of the hockey games it showed that not having that backing was struggling a bit, but otherwise as a whole the Roses away at Lancaster, I know I had an absolutely fantastic time.
Is there anything you could take from Lancaster to bring back to York next year for next year's Roses? As you said, you are running for tournament sec, so is there anything you've learnt whilst you're in Lancaster to bring back to York?
I think the fixtures over the board could be more spread out, so not having so much of the main ones all like grouped together, so loads of people can watch more of the matches. I mean, it would have been fantastic to watch some of the darts games that we just heard and some of the swimming, but sadly a lot of it clashes. It would be good to space them all out. It would also be really good to get some big build-up going, more to do with the press, to get interviews going with more or less acknowledged sports. But overall, I think just the whole village atmosphere that Lancaster had is something we could really, really bring into York next year.
Fantastic. And I wish you the best of luck for running for tournament sec. That was Izzy Hutchinson. Back to you, Mitch.
Sorry, thank you very much for speaking to us, guys. Just had a message in online saying nothing is accidental where Chris Butterworth is concerned. I think that must refer to my hockey report. Keep the messages coming in online. Unfortunately, York went on to lose the 50th edition of Roses away to rivals Lancaster, achieving 142.5 points to the home side's 183.5 points. Lancaster were made to wait to reach the decisive 163.5 points needed to regain the Carter James Trophy, with York forcing the Varsity competition all the way to the final Sunday afternoon. However, knowing that the 4 points on offer in the women's basketball fixture would be enough to seal victory, Lancaster romped to a 62-27 win that now takes their Roses record to 24 wins, one short of York's 25, not discounting the competition's lone draw in 1974. URY's Al Riddell and I were there to witness Lancaster's win in the women's basketball, and with that, the moment that York relinquished the Roses crown for another year.
Not so much a war of attrition, but it has been just slowly but surely Lancaster have been scoring the baskets, and we're hearing an announcement here that might make everyone slightly excited.
The ladies' basketball match will be played in the sports hall, is worth 4 points. Thank you.
So yet further confirmation to the delight of the home Lancaster fans that a win here will mean that the Roses trophy is won by Lancaster. The crowd roar. Yet another point for Lancaster.
That ball did not want to go into that net, but the crowd willed it in. They blew it in themselves. And down it went, and everyone cheered. It was amazing to see. Number four with the second penalty.
And again, the point from Lancaster's number four. We have just 9 seconds of this match remaining. Lancaster have dominated it. Here we go with the countdown.
This is it.
If you can still hear us, Lancaster have won this match 62 points to York's 27, and with that 4 points they win Roses 2014. It's all over, Al.
Unbelievable scenes here, Mitch, in the sports hall. The women from Lancaster have shown York how to play basketball, and they have drubbed them, it has to be said. 62 points to 27. It was kind of expected, but no one expected a whole of Roses to hinge on this one match. And it's great to see Roses settled with a lovely women's sports that has been played in such an amicable fashion today, Mitch.
Absolutely. A very impressive performance from Lancaster's basketball team to really crown the glory of what has been an excellent varsity tournament for them. The fans here clearly know what it means. The players here clearly know what it means. With that 4 points, they win Roses 2014.
There we have it. Let's go home, Mitch.
Absolutely. Jubilant celebrations all around us here among the Lancaster fans. Let's see if we can get a word with one of them. Are there any very, very happy Lancaster fans right now that want to speak to us? In fact, we're joined by Lancaster's sports editor, Potts. What does it mean to you?
La, 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 la.
Lancaster, la la la, Lancaster, la la la, Lancaster, la la la, Lancaster.
So a valiant effort from the black and gold, but a deserved victory for Lancaster, who had clearly gone to great lengths to prepare for the tournament and to make it a challenging and hostile environment for the visitors. After the game, our friends at Lancaster's Bellrig FM spoke to York Sport president Cass Brown.
We're here with Cass Brown. How are you doing, Cass?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
And how do you feel about this tournament?
Yeah, obviously a little bit gutted, but it's an away roses, you know, like we were never meant to win. Lancaster have been amazing. They've done really well, much better than they did last year, obviously. So yeah, I'm happy for them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're going to go home with a... How's the team morale feeling, you?
Yeah, absolutely fine. I mean, I think I'm still quite impressed with the score. I mean, we've got 40 more points than Lancaster got when they lost to us last year. And so that is pretty impressive that we've only just found out the winner and it's mid-afternoon.
It's pretty much the last year.
Yeah.
There's still time to reduce the point difference.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're going to go and support the women's football in a minute.
So come on, York. You can at least reduce the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go, York. Woo!
Yeah.
Come second. It's not last.
Thank you very much, Cass.
No, it's fine.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Good luck, York.
U-R-Y.
The U-R-Y Sports Hour.
It's 6:34 p.m. still to come on tonight's show. Can York City complete a dramatic turnaround with promotion to League One?
I think York have every chance, but it's very, very nip and tuck.
As the Minstermen prepare for their playoff semi-final against Fleetwood, we speak to York, BBC Radio York's Barry Parker about the team's prospects. Also on tonight's show, we look back on York's inaugural triathlon and speak to a student who took part.
People see the three disciplines and they want to do something that pushes themselves. And this is a perfect opportunity to do it.
Plus, we'll be looking ahead to the weekend's big international sport action. Tonight we've got the launch of the Giro d'Italia, the weekend's Premier League finale, and Monday's England World Cup final squad announcement.
The URY Sports Hour with Mitch Holder-Mansfield.
A few messages to read out then. Lots of love again coming in for the darts. Someone here saying, woo, Claire Thomas, great darts interview, past, present and future, letting the guest tell the story, making darts interesting, excellent. And I'm going to stay away from those scary Lanx darts women, keep it up. Another comment here saying, nothing is accidental where Chris Butterworth is concerned. I think that's some kind of reference to my hockey report earlier. And one here saying, Hutch loves hockey. The ladies, ones and bunk beds. Not entirely sure what that means, but keep the messages coming in online, www.org.uk. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/URYsports, and on Twitter using the hashtag Roses2014. Now, at Christmas time, it looked as though York City FC would be locked in another League Two relegation battle. However, after a dramatic turnaround, an extraordinary run of 17 games unbeaten going back to the start of February, the Minstermen suddenly found themselves with a playoff semi-final against Fleetwood to look forward to. Ahead of Saturday's first leg, I spoke to BBC York's chief football commentator, Barry Parker, and began by asking him what York's dramatic turnaround since the turn of the year has been down to.
Oh, no, it's dramatic, Elton. They just stopped letting goals going in all of a sudden. Mm. They managed to get to the end of December without managing to keep a one-goal lead for more than 20 minutes without either conceding or scoring more at the other end. And that just went on and on and on. It's a crazy record. But basically, they just shut up shop. It's quite an incredible turnaround, even more so when you think of some of the players who've come in who've accomplished that. Let's be blunt here. We're talking about rejects. Defensively, Mansfield didn't want McCoo. Cheltenham didn't want Penn. And of course, the loan system. The manager's done a good job with the loan system. So they just shut up shop at the back. There's no comparison between the goals they're letting in first half of the season and the number of goals they're letting in second half of the season, which is hardly any at all. That's made a big difference. They're actually scoring fewer goals since January than they had been until the end of December. But they've stopped letting them in. It's made a massive difference.
And you mentioned that the players that have come in and the way in which Nigel has exploited the loan system. Looking longer term, is that a possible concern? There's going to need to be a lot of work done in the summer.
Well, there's no reason, as far as the loan system's concerned, why they can't continue that as we'd like to think, rise up the division in our dreams. The big question is, how good are the players? Could they actually cope with League One level? That's a big thing. And again, you're back to the Penn, the McCombs, the Lowe's, people like that who their original clubs didn't actually think were good enough to play in League Two. But there you are. You see, Nigel Worthington's background, well, we know he's managed in the top level, we know he's managed Northern Ireland, but he's probably more familiar with the Championship and League One. So you would think he's moving into his own element, if you like, Nigel Worthington, if York go up. So whilst I'm not quite sure who might go and who might stay, I'm pretty sure that Nigel Worthington will be sure, and he's obviously seen something in those players he's brought in that might accomplish something at a higher level.
So you don't think there's a danger that should York City get promoted that it will be a little bit premature given what a dramatic turnaround it's been?
It might be for a few players, but I think the manager, with his knowledge of Championship and League One level, did something about it. He'll pretty well work out who can achieve it at that level and who can't.
You mentioned, of course, Nigel Worthington's experience. He's managed at, let's be honest, at a much higher level than York City before. The board won't want him to do too well, will they? Because otherwise we might be in danger of losing him.
It's funny, I was thinking about that at Scunthorpe and chatting to my summariser Chris Jones about that. York might be lucky in the sense they've got a manager who's moving them up, who other teams aren't looking for. They don't see him as being that young. Maybe they can't offer him very much to get into another club because he's already been there and much, much higher. So he might as well stay at York. We just might be in luck with this, and you never know how far he might yet take the club.
I think you make a good point because, of course, the results themselves haven't been terribly spectacular or eye-catching, but they've just been so consistent. But, Barry, we speak about this, but they're not there yet. Let's look ahead to the game itself. You've seen Fleetwood play this season. What kind of game is it going to be, and what kind of chance do York stand?
All sorts of ways you can look at that. Thinking about the times we've played Fleetwood, lost 1-1, but even when we won one, we did very well to do so at their place. They looked a very strong side. Nigel Woods has described them as being the Manchester City of this division. Mm-hmm. I don't see them being fined £50 million, mind, but they are. And for them, they've underachieved. They will feel they've underachieved with the budget that they've got. The chairman, Andy Pillis, put millions into that club, and they'll feel they should have got one of the three automatic places, and that hasn't happened. Some might feel that York have overachieved. It's a difficult one to call. On form since January, which is maybe what you're talking about, York have every chance. I think it'd be a very cagey game, but I think York have every chance, but it's very, very nip and tuck.
That was BBC Radio York's Barry Parker speaking to me there. Tomorrow's 7:30 p.m. kickoff is, I'm afraid, already a sellout, but to hear my report from the Bootham Crescent, be sure to tune in to the ORY News Hour next Wednesday at 6 p.m, the second leg to be played at Fleetwood a week today. For now, if, like me, you were cycling to the York Sport Village two Sundays ago, you may have accidentally found yourself taking part in the inaugural York City Triathlon. Following our chat with him, when the event was first announced, we're now joined in the studio by Ben Green from the University of York Triathlon Club to find out how it went. Ben, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks. How much?
Now, we spoke to you several months ago when the event was announced, when you were in training. Lots of optimism for the event. How did it end up going?
The event was really well run. Yeah, really well run by UK Triathlon, who organised it. And thanks to the staff up there, who also did a very good job. The university team entered 16 athletes, a mix of guys and girls. All 16 finished. All 16 finished in the top half of the race, which was excellent. And credit to all the hard work that everyone's put in over the rainy winter months. Special mentions have got to go to Hannah Howitt, who picked up the silver in the women's race. Ted Thornton, who picked up a bronze in the men's super sprint. So that was a half difference. And John Sanderson, who was the best finisher at the guys, who finished in the top 10 of the men's sprint. So excellent all round.
I think you're being very modest there as well, Ben. You actually didn't do too badly yourself, did you?
I was a couple of minutes behind John, which I'm sure he won't let me forget. But no, yeah, top 20, so not too bad.
And this was, as I say, the inaugural event. What was the organisation like? I mentioned there that I actually was just cycling my bike ordinary route to the gym, and I did actually find myself caught up in the triathlon and had some difficulties getting out of the route. You didn't encounter any such difficulties?
The speed you go in, you must have blended in beautifully.
Absolutely.
From a participant's point of view, it was organised exceptionally well. The swim went off without any incident. The bike route appeared to be cordoned off and well marshalled, although perhaps I'm revising my review on that. The run was very simple. The course was laps of the bike route up and down Hez East, and the run was laps of the custom built cycle track down there. And I think simplicity really, really played to the strength of the organisers in that they were short laps, very easy to see, and providing you didn't lose count, it was a very easy course, flat course, a fast course, so some quick times, but you don't really appreciate quite how windy Hez East is until you're cycling up and down a bike trying to keep up 20 miles an hour, and that you really did get caught in that wind.
Now, you shouldn't have found it too difficult, should you? Because when we spoke to you last, you were planning to do an Ironman. Is that still the plan?
That is still on the cards, yeah. That's the plan for September.
And that's is it Manchester?
Tenby in South Wales.
Right, okay.
Tenby in South Wales. Yeah, distance-wise, not particularly hard. I finished in just over an hour, relative to an Ironman, which is going to be more like 12, 13, 14. But of course, the speed you do it is very different. I mean, running a 5K and running a marathon, present their own challenges. And the challenge with the short events is the intensity of it.
Absolutely. Well, quite an achievement. Congratulations and best of luck for the Ironman. Hopefully we'll be able to speak to you again then before and after.
Yeah, thanks very much. Cheers, Mitch.
Thanks, Ben. And don't forget, if you want to share any of your Rose's experiences with us tonight, you can join the discussion by sending us a message at ury.org.uk, on Twitter at ursports, or on facebook.com/ursports. You may want to join the debate now because, as ever, we're going to conclude tonight's show by debating some of the weekend's big national and international sport, and really where to start this weekend. To help me with the discussion, I'm joined now live in the studio by Jimmy Johnson from the cycling blog Tricycle Stabilisers. Hey, Jimmy.
Hiya.
The new, I believe, York Vision sports editor, Helena Sutcliffe. Hello, Helena.
Hello, yes.
Making your debuts tonight, guys, on the URY Sports Hour. Thank you both for coming in. And, of course, the familiar voice of Will Rawlinson from URY. So, a lot to get through tonight, guys, and not a lot of time to do it. Let's start by talking about the Giro d'Italia, which gets underway tonight in Belfast, actually. For those that don't know, I think we can describe the Giro really as the Italian version of the Tour de France, and like the Tour de France this year, it's not actually starting in its home country. Jimmy, can you tell us a little bit about this?
It's sort of the Tour de France traditionally, well, not traditionally, but often outsources its start, so they run it in other countries. It helps build the profile, and Yorkshire is hosting the Tour de France Grand Départ this year. The Giro does the same thing to sort of rival the Tour de France, and this year it's in Ireland. The team time trial is the first stage, it's running at the moment in the middle of Belfast, and it's very exciting. Actually, a lot of people believe the Giro is actually a better race than the Tour de France, and so if of like pure cycling fans. Mm-hmm. So it's a seriously big event, it's not one to be taken lightly. And it's going to be 3 weeks of very hard racing.
But it is, as you say, a very tough race. A lot of the big names have either pulled out or decided to give it a miss. where does that leave us in terms of favourites?
Sky's Richie Porte has pulled out. There's not a lot of detail as to why, actually. He's just sort of... he had an illness at some point around March, and his form just wasn't there, and he had to leave. So in terms of favourites, that leaves two big fish in the pond. That's Nairo Quintana, who races for the Spanish Movistar team, and Joaquin Rodriguez, who races for Katusha, who are a Russian team. And beyond them, there's a raft of about six, seven men who could challenge them and ought to be in the top ten, but those really are the two guys who are going to be sort of fighting it out on the big mountains.
And no return of Nibali, last year's champion. Are there any Italian prospects to get the home fans excited?
There's plenty of Italians going to be racing, and they will pick up stage wins. But in terms of a GC contender, no. They've got Michele Scarponi, who's won it before. They've got Ivan Basso, who's sort of, his career's kind of in the twilight now, it's ending. But my favourite one actually is Domenico Pozzovivo, who's he's about the size of a tea bag. Mm-hmm. He's a tiny little guy. He's a fully qualified doctor, I believe. And he sort of rose to prominence in this race a couple of years ago, and he's an unbelievably good climber. He's useless on any other terrain, but going up a mountain, he's very impressive. So if they've got any chance of pulling out a home surprise, he's the man.
Okay, so that's a relatively unfamiliar name to look out for. The Giro, of course, not the only big cycling event taking place this week. We also have the inaugural Women's Tour of Britain. A lot has been discussed about whether or not a women's tour taking place on its own is a good thing. Helena, can I ask you what your views are on women's sports events and whether or not they do generally benefit from taking place alongside the men's event? A lot of debate surrounding this. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think that it's important for women to not really think about it in that way. Mm. I think you've got to just, it's the women's sport, it's there, and it's important for women and men just to enjoy it. And, you know, for example, I think most people think about tennis, how men's tennis is so much more popular. But I think that that shouldn't mean that women shouldn't compete alongside. I think that we've got to just do our best to promote it. And sometimes that can be helped by being alongside the men, because sometimes like that can help them to, like, sometimes the men can help. Like, I remember last night Raheem Sterling was retweeting that there was a women's football match going on, which of course nobody could was hearing about because it's not really broadcasted that much in the news, and that was really helpful. So I think that sometimes they can help them out.
So of course women's sports can benefit from the exposure with men's sport, but it still can be successful as a standalone event, you think?
I think, yeah, definitely.
Now, I for one am absolutely obsessed with the spectacle of women cycling. Have you managed to catch any of it, Jimmy, at all? Who do you think the favourites are?
It's tricky to do so because one of the main problems that women's cycling and a lot of women's sport in general face is coverage. Mm. So actually getting hold of footage of it is it's easier said than done sometimes.
I think we've just got highlights, is it, on ITV, I think?
ITV are covering it, yes.
No live coverage, I don't think.
I'm not actually sure, to be honest. I've been stuck in the library. I've been following the results, though, and it's been it's clearly been very hard racing. It's been slightly criticised for the course. Some people have complained that the course is too flat and there are no time trials, so you don't necessarily get a very selective race. But it's the first, I believe it's the first edition of the race, and there's, you know, plenty to learn. And the good thing about it actually is it stands alone from the men's version of the Tour of Britain. The men's Tour of Britain's in the autumn sometime, I believe. Which is good. Often women's cycling races run alongside the men's cycling races. They kind of, and in a way, that's sort of, they sort of piggyback off the men's races. And I don't think it should be like that. I think they should be allowed to, well, not allowed to, but it's perfectly fine for them to just go and do their own race and, off their own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. And it's done very well. In terms of how it's been received, it's done very well as a race. And it's brought out so far. I've only caught 2 stages so far, but it's been very promising stuff.
Okay, great. Well, if any of the listeners have any strong opinions on that issue, don't forget to let us know, www.uoy.org.uk. In the meantime, you can keep up with the Giro, I'm sure, on Jimmy's blog. The website is, Jimmy?
It's tricyclestabilizerswithaz.wordpress.com.
Excellent. We're going to have to leave the cycling there for now with so much football to talk about. We've of course got the England World Cup squad announcement to come on Monday, with the World Cup just 5 weeks away. Can you believe it? So that's where we're going to start. Will, I believe you've prepared a squad for us. Could you quickly run us through the names?
Yeah, I shall. So we've got the goalkeepers are Butland, Foster, Hart. Our defence contains Baines, Cahill, Dawson, Flanagan, interestingly enough, Jagielka, Johnson and Luke Shaw and Chris Smalling. Our midfield is Barkley, Chamberlain, Gerrard, Henderson, Lallana, Milner and Wilshire. And our strike force is Jermaine Defoe, of all people, Rooney, Sterling, Sturridge and Welbeck. And I think Roy Hodgson, if he's listening to UOI, will take the hint that this is the 23 that should be going, Mitch.
Okay, strong words there. For anyone tuning in late, just to confirm, that was not Roy Hodgson's squad. That was Will Rawlinson's squad.
Might as well be.
Yeah. Okay, we'll find out on Monday how accurate it was. Some interesting names there, not least of which Liverpool's Flanagan. I saw Helena nodding her head there with enthusiasm.
Can't tell I'm a Liverpool fan, can you?
You agree with that, do you?
Definitely. I mean, he's come into the squad. Jose Enrique was out injured quite early on in the season, and Liverpool didn't really have any realistic replacement. And Flanagan's come in. He's a really young player. He's from Liverpool. He's local, and he's, you know, had to really step up, and I think he's done a really good job. So I think he's definitely worth a shout.
But an area in which England have so much strength in depth, and we can't say that about many positions. What do you think, Jimmy? We've got Cole, Luke Shaw, Baines. You think Flanagan could end up going in as left back?
With Shaw in the squad as well, Luke Shaw and Flanagan.
I'm saying Flanagan, having Flanagan instead of Kyle Walker would be the person I'd choose.
Okay,
that's the replacement I've made, really.
Okay, because I think we know Walker's not going to make it.
I don't think he is.
So is that with a view to possibly playing Flanagan at right back?
That's the idea, because you've got the cover on the left. You've got Shaw and Baines, which is fantastic. That's such a fantastic two left backs to have. So I think it's Flanagan's chance, I think, this World Cup.
Okay, Cole did very well when finally called upon again for Chelsea in the Champions League. Jimmy, what do you reckon? Does he deserve another shot at the World Cup?
I think he should be taken. Yeah, I think at the past few tournaments he's been England's best player. He's been very, very consistent, and I think in such a high-pressure scenario, it's a cliche, isn't it? But there's no substitute for experience. Mm. Personally, I'd take Ashley Cole over Luke Shaw.
Okay, well, the other name that really, really stuck out for me there was Jermaine Defoe, now, of course, at the almighty Toronto FC. Did well in his debut there, I think, but has since struggled with injuries as well. What do you think, Helena? Jermaine Defoe at the World Cup?
I think you've got to ask the question, who else, really? I mean, he's got the experience, he's been to World Cups before, and I think if you're thinking of someone to bring on who you know can score a goal, I'd personally have him over Danny Welbeck. That might be a bit of bias coming in there, but...
Yes, OK, but you think starting with Sturridge, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, Sturridge and Rooney. But I think, you have really got to think of who else you possibly could have, just as, you know, if disaster strikes and... Both Sturridge and Rooney are quite prone to injury.
Okay, quite a wild card. We've got a message just come in here now saying no Lambert ? Is that?
I was just about to say.
And more viable alternative. Will, did Ricky Lambert, of course, of Southampton, come into your thinking?
He didn't at all, really. He didn't at all. I just don't think he has the. I think if this World Cup, England need to try and bring in the youth, but also use the experience. And Lambert doesn't really have either of those. And I think we've got to take advantage of youth and experience. And he doesn't have youth, and he doesn't have any experience at a World Cup. So I don't think he's the man.
Okay, well, we'll find out on Monday. But before then, of course, we've got the minor issue of the Premier League finale. Who here wants to be brave enough to say that the title race isn't yet over? Helena, you're a Liverpool fan?
Hello. Yeah, I was at the game against Chelsea, so I honestly thought that losing that game was when the title had been won by Manchester City, and it's going to be a really tough ask to say that Andy Carroll's going to do Liverpool a favour. And
Stuart Downing as
well. Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean, I think Sam Allardyce was saying today that he'd like to see Steven Gerrard lift the title. But I think Man City, you know, they're at home. Aguero's fit now. So with him and Yaya Toure in the form that they are, it's difficult to see, but it's not over. It's not over till it's over.
So you think the Palace heartbreak was actually irrelevant in the sense that the title was already lost in the Chelsea game?
I think that they only needed to draw the Chelsea game, and therefore the tactics that they used going into the game, they knew exactly what Chelsea were going to do. They'd done the exact same thing against Atletico a couple of days earlier, so Liverpool should have gone going for a draw. And then, it was obviously an awful result against Crystal Palace, but I think the title had pretty much gone before then.
Jimmy, what do you think? How impressive have City been in recent weeks?
Well, they've been clinical. They've done what they've needed to do, haven't they? There's been a lot of talk about how they've spent very little time at the top of the league. They've just been lying in wait. They've done the job very well, and they've got plenty of experience of winning a tight Premier League finale at home, haven't they? So it's hard to see them slipping up at home against West Ham, of all people, who aren't exactly... You know, it's not like Chelsea are rocking up to play them, is it? It seems as good as over.
Okay. Sorry about that, Helena.
All right, we'll get over it.
We'll be thinking of you. I'd like to say there's always next year, but you sense that this was the opportunity for Liverpool.
I think they're, you know, they're in the Champions League next year, so they can get a stronger squad. I think we'll be going again next year.
Okay, there was one point where we thought we were going to be coming down to the last day with the relegation battle all up for grabs, the title all up for grabs, maybe even the Champions League spots. Recent weeks, it hasn't really turned out like that. Well, how disappointed were you to see the likes of Cardiff and Fulham bow out so lamely?
Yeah, that's the problem. I'm a lower league supporter, Mitch, as you know. So as a neutral to the Premier League, I was excited to see on the last day of the Premier League the title up for grabs, Champions League and relegation, and none of that now really is going to happen. So it's a shame because it's 2 years ago with Manchester City and Manchester United fighting for the title was just so exciting from a neutral point of view. It's a shame that we can't have that again, but maybe that'll happen next season when it opens up a little bit more.
Okay, we don't have much time left. I'd love to have really been able to discuss with you Greg Dyke's FA proposals, but I don't think we're going to have the time to do that. So instead, with the Premier League coming to an end this weekend, I'm just going to quickly go round and I want to know your player of the season, manager of the season, please. Will Rawlinson, starting with you.
Player of the season has to be Luis Suarez, and manager of the season is Tony Pulis.
Ooh. Helena shaking her head there.
Has to be Brendan. Has to be Brendan Rodgers. I think with the squad that he's been given and what he's done, I think, and obviously I'd go for Suarez definitely with player.
Okay. And Jimmy?
Player of the season is actually Aaron Ramsey for me. I think he carried that
half. He played half the season.
Yeah, for that half of the season when he wasn't crippled, I thought he carried the Arsenal team brilliantly, and I've never seen one player lead a team so strongly. And manager of the season, I'd have to agree with Pulis. He's been unreal at Palace. He's been immense.
See, you're right. Ramsey sounds ridiculous having missed out, but even in recent weeks when he's come back into the Arsenal side, they've looked a different side.
Yeah.
And you can't help but think what might have been had he and Walcott, I guess, been fit throughout the season. Guys, thank you very much for coming in to speak to us. We'll be speaking to you soon. Enjoy the Giro d'Italia, Jimmy. Enjoy the Premier League weekend, the rest of you. We'll be speaking to you soon. Thank you very much for listening to the URY Sports Hour. Look out for the podcast online. We'll be back soon. But for now, we leave you with your latest URY news headlines on the hour with Ben Bason.
The URY Sports Hour with Mitch Holder-Mansfield.